Good morning. It is Thursday, the 14th of July, and it looks like for the second time this week, our talk shop guest and I will be starting the show without our host.
I'm a little bit more concerned that you brought a folder.
You know me.
Yeah. That's why I'm concerned.
I never know what you're going to ask. What's so hiding? I bring notes for whatever.
No. Oh, is that what that is?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. It's a Thursday already. Joining us this morning is Maggie Fleming.
Good morning.
I guess for
July
6 months?
14th.
5 months.
Six. I got six left.
You're not going to do the day countdown thing, are you?
No. I have too much to do. That overwhelms me.
Yeah,
see how few days I have left. I got a lot I got to get done. Things I thought I'd get done my first year, you know.
Oh, I see. Still, the list is still on the wall.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, are you ready for Why Do We Say That?
Why not?
All right. Why do we say something is jerry-built?
I have no idea.
Oh.
You don't usually get that from me, do you? I try so hard, but that wouldn't stump me.
A person shown a hastily constructed home or office is likely to reject it as being jerry-built. That may be because the language of the sea remains alive and well in the speech of landlubbers. Gales often snapped some of the masts of sailing vessels. Sailors responded by rigging temporary poles in order to try to make port. I guess kind of like PG&E does with the utility poles that you see strapped, right? In their lingo, a flimsy, upright, likely to crash on the heads of crew members was often dubbed as an injury mast. Abbreviated to jury mast, the name of the hastily erected timber seems to have been slurred to a jerry mast. Landsmen borrowed the expressive term and applied it to anything flimsy that was put together hastily. Like the old-time sailor's jury mast, jerry-built housing is likely to deteriorate almost before the newness has worn off. Kind of like, I guess, that siding that LP made for a couple of years.
Well,
remember those things?
Yeah, and then I was thinking, my brother lives in the Central Valley, and, you know, it sort of exploded about 20 years ago, and they had really poor construction, and he said you could see, you know, roofs were failing stuff within the first couple of years. It was really, and then, of course, the people who put them up were long since gone. They'd moved on to somewhere else. There was no way for the homeowners to go back, and it was rough.
Yeah, it kind of begs the whole question about having a home inspection.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or at least see the place before you buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what the next little bit is with housing around here.
Well, and I do think people maybe have a false sense of security when it's new development. You know, you actually think it's going to be done
then
well.
You look at what a 2x4 really is these days.
Right. You know, I was just going to say,
wait a minute.
The old homes really were built incredibly well.
You guys don't have a Vicky, do you?
No, I wish.
Well,
yeah. I wish. My husband doesn't. We looked at several when we first moved here because I just think they're so awesome. And he just kept turning to me and saying, let's remember, neither of us is a contractor. He's a smart man.
Yeah. Oh, indoor plumbing. You're looking for indoor plumbing, too.
Electrical?
Yeah. But there is something cool about the old houses.
Yes.
I guess they're converting a lot of them from multiple back to single.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a cool trend. I don't know if you can save it all.
Right.
Because there was so much destruction done when they went the other direction.
Yeah.
But
no, they're beautiful.
That would have to be a lifetime project.
Yeah.
And then there's painting.
See, I can
on
paint.
The outside. On the outside.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Not on the outside. No, I lived in a really old house, and it wasn't a Victorian, but, you know, and all the built-ins were so awesome, and, you know, all those sorts of things that you just don't have anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Times were different, I guess, is the simplest way to think of it.
Yeah.
So you've got semi-budget.
Yes. Well, in September we will. But we kind of, I mean, I think we all feel pretty confident.
That's kind of what Steve Madrone was saying yesterday, is that, you know, while the pennies may be in different piles at this point,
right,
that the sum total is kind of well known, or at least believed to be well known.
Right. And, you know, the Board of Supes did a really good move, and well, about 6 months ago, and they brought in a CFO, a chief financial officer for the CAO's office. And Tabitha's been working, that's who it is, been working very hard trying to reconcile bank statements from the 2019-2020 year. And so she's already determined that we're not in a scary zone on that. And then I know Rochelle.
2 years ago, we weren't scary.
Right. But just, you know, that's where it starts. It's kind of like you got to go back. I mean, it's
to go forward.
Home economics, right? You know, you look at your checkbook, and if you forgot to balance 6 months ago, you're still not balanced today. So kind of looking at it and figuring it out. But that's
you may want to explain
one.
What balancing a checkbook means to about half of the audience.
Right.
It doesn't mean looking online to your account at the bank.
Right. Reconciling everything and figuring out how much outstanding you have, because that's the other one.
The surprises.
Yes.
Now, I wouldn't imagine there's too many from 2 years ago for the county situation.
Right. Yeah. And then also the issue is the unknown, I think, is how much have we paid in fees that, you know, I know there were some of those that people were surprised by.
The penalties?
Yes. So we're, you know, obviously those are six figures, and that can be a big deal. So
six would probably be considered a huge victory at this point.
Right.
Cumulatively, if that's all the county was out.
Right.
I suspect it's closer to eight.
Let's hope not. So.
Well, it's already gone.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's not, you know, like you have to pay for it today. You just have to groan about it today.
Yeah, reconcile the books to show that. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when you guys and gals were putting together the budget for your office, what'd you use? 90%? 95%?
We went in saying, here's where we were last year. Here are our increased costs. This is where our budget will need to be moving forward, and let's hope that that's what we're going to be seeing from the. So, and just so everybody knows, we're at about 50% general fund. The rest is either grants or Measure Z or other funding that we receive. For example, the Department of Health and Human Services shares costs for our child abuse services team, including staffing. So we have a number.
So that could be a double impact.
Yeah, that's true. But we have a number of funds that we know, right? It's just, what are we going to get out of the general fund? Where are we there? So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, and are the grants still continuing to be able to be applied for?
So far, because we're operating on our years of being upstanding, good
nice grantees. People. Yes, you remember the birthdays and the anniversaries. Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Subtle, but it's there. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Maggie Fleming. So budget is done. Transition, is it going to be that significant? Have you talked to the troops? I mean, everybody knows who Stacy is.
Right.
And she's kind of there, but now she ain't one of them anymore.
Right.
Things are different. How are you going to handle that? It's kind of like the baseball player who retires, becomes the manager. And now all of a sudden he's not part of the team anymore. He's in a different position.
Right. So I think having moved her, you know, first into the senior position and then into the assistant DA job, she's really well set up for that, because as the assistant DA, she was already more into that.
She is.
Right.
What about the rest of the gang?
But I'm just saying, I think they were already getting used to that, right? Because she was sitting there when we had personnel issues. She was sitting there when we were discussing, hey, we're going to have to make some reassignments here. Things like that. So they've already seen her in that role. And then when I'm not there, Stacy, you know, has seamlessly taken on those responsibilities.
So she's going to have a cardboard cutout of you?
No.
Just
not
sitting
at all.
right there.
No, Stacy's definitely her own person. Will do a lot of things her own way. I can guarantee that. So, which is great. You know, I think it's great. But I was telling her yesterday, because we were interviewing One of the things that I like to do is before anyone comes in any job in the office, whatever it is, after they've passed the supervisors who are hiring them for their unit, then I meet with that individual. And so I said, you should start doing this too. And it's just good. You're basically meeting someone before they become part of the team and making sure, you know, you have that final approval. And we were going through that. And then afterwards, I said to her how much I appreciated this process. And I said, you know, I was reflecting on Terry Farmer unseated the incumbent and then was DA for 20 years. And then Paul Gallegos unseated Farmer and was DA for 12 years. And then I ran from outside of the office. So it's now been over 40 years since somebody from within the office moved into the DA job. So we are in a unique, smooth transition time.
Was DePauli from inside the office?
I have no idea. That's what I was trying to remember. So, you know, I can only go back.
And all the guys that would
40.
Know just bang off are not around anymore.
They're not. That's going back quite a ways.
So, yeah.
So it's a, you know, it's a really, it's what you hope for, you know, because when you build a team and, you know, you're ready to retire, you really hope for the team that they can keep moving forward, you know, learning from each other, learning on their experience, you know, building on that. And anytime there's a big transition, it can really impact that stability and that body of knowledge.
Well, and if there's a need for a the evolution, not the
right.
or the revolution, not the evolution.
Right.
Yeah,
you know,
I would suspect that this is probably the last time that it was just somebody else signing the checks was maybe Farmer.
Right.
Maybe before that, because everybody else, you know, it's been swinging around so much.
Right.
With the last couple of times, that it's got to be a nice load not to have to carry.
It is, and it's, you know I rave about our business manager because she's so awesome. But she and Stacy have that relation, you know, where she can say, "Hey, this is gonna be in the budget. You know, what do you think?" And they go back and forth. And I just so appreciate that because those are so many of the nuts and bolts that I had to learn sort of on the job, and Rochelle had to learn it on the job with me. And again, that structure is what really helps us do our job. You know, always being aware of, hey, we're going to have this very expensive cost next year. How are we going to budget for it? What are we going to do? How are we going to plan for it? And being able to look down the road 2 or 3 years, you know, being able to know that we have that.
Not being lawyers, but on the business side.
Right, on the administration side. Right. You have to be able to fund the projects that you know are necessary for the community.
Okay. So you said those big expenses 3 or 4 years down the road when you were doing the budget this year. What's the big thing out there 3 or 4 years down the road that you're looking at going, well, maybe not?
Well, one of the areas that we know is critical to efficiency is the, you know, they call them case management systems. So we went, after a couple of years, Rochelle and I brought in the prosecutor by Carpell. So that's our case management, and we've now sort of gotten that worked out. Interfacing with the courts was a huge hurdle. Now, and we're happy about it, but all of law enforcement's gone to RIMS, every single agency. Well, we need to be able to interface with RIMS. It was trickier when everybody had their own, right? Because then you're working one-on-one. But now we have a countywide system. Our goal is not only to have complete interface with that, but the next part is we want to have, there's a system called iSubpoena where we can do it by email. And it's literally you're getting the message to your cell phone, either that you're needed, you know, on this date, or that you're being called off. That is something we've been working for some time.
So it's a communications device.
Exactly.
For the folks that you rely on.
Right. And these are all obviously, you know, expensive projects, but the efficiency, as you can imagine, right now, Humboldt Superior Courts, and we've asked them not to do it this way, but this is their system right now, is every single preliminary hearing, the witnesses and officers are served for 9:15, even though, of course, we don't have the court capacity to handle every single case at 9:15. So law enforcement officers and citizens sit around for hours. It's absolutely absurd. And the idea that, and we've asked, you know, Stacey and I had a meeting with the judges, well, in January, and we've asked for it since then. We've asked that we have a roll call and then set times when cases are going to be called, and then we would alert people when to be in court.
It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with still Humboldt County's DA, Maggie Fleming. You know, I know you're going to start checking out if you start sending Stacy in early.
Actually,
oh, she's on vacation.
Well,
she's out of the office.
She will be here next month because I will be on vacation that week of August. So
perfect.
I did tell her that already. I said, don't forget next month you got kids. So.
Yeah.
That's funny you said
that. And she
that.
Groaned.
No, not at all.
No, okay. Not yet. Oh, so as you look at these communication infrastructure systems that are potentially out there, is it just dollars and cents, or is it like combined dispatch, that there's philosophical elements involved and people walls, I guess, or people impediments, personality challenges that are also there? Well, we haven't done that way before. It's working now just fine from our perspective. And then, you know, that attitude, is that part of having to get this addressed? Because I can't imagine why we're paying a cop to sit there for 4 hours and then tell him that he's not needed and go home
right
on his day off.
Or worse.
Or all day.
When he's,
and he's off the street.
Been up all night and
yeah.
Should be home sleeping. And by the time we say, oh, you can go home. They can't. They have to go back to work. It's absurd. It really is. And, you know, they're short-staffed. So to go to your question, Brad, no, it's absolutely, there are no barriers philosophically or personality-wise. It really is the issue of making sure when the two systems, for lack of a better term, exchange information, that it's all allowed, it's all correct, and that the...
So it's confidentiality.
It's confidentiality. Related. It's, you know, when the moment you say this is going to go to the cloud, we can't have, you can't have people's rap sheets, CLETs, things like that in the cloud. The law doesn't allow it. So we have those problems. That's why...
So like being set, it almost has to be filtered before it can be stored?
It's absurd. That's just why people still have fax machines in government, because there's so much that you cannot, which to me is... I'm not sure how it's different.
Thermal?
Yeah. But the other issue is there is so much information that is behind what you see on paper. So, for example, when we file a criminal charge and it goes over, the complaint reads Penal Code Section 211-212.5C, and that's robbery, and it's... But there's all this other sort of coding behind it so that when the courts receive it, and report it out to DOJ, it's correctly reported. These are the issues that when we say we want our two systems to talk to each other, all of that has to be done behind the scenes. And it's a huge undertaking. And again, this is where someone like Rochelle is crucial because she's worked so many of the jobs in the DA's office. She's aware of more of that. You know, I look at the piece of paper and go, it says robbery, we're good to go. And she says, right, but there's a lot more information that actually has to be transmitted.
So it's like encrypted?
It's coding. It's just,
okay,
but it's
so. If I got it, all I would see would be that
exactly,
initial sheet,
exactly,
and the other stuff,
right, is there
gibberish
for reporting purposes.
Yeah.
All right, so those are the steps, and then with our use of iSubpoena, the issue is our IT, the county IT, has to permit that because of security issues and information that's being put out.
So similar to like what HIPAA law is.
Sort of like that, right.
The legal version thereof.
It's also security, right? Because if we start using yet another transmittal of information, does that allow someone to potentially hack our entire system, right? So there's all these little steps that take so much time and are so involved.
Incredible.
And you
too.
Have to have it all ready to go and basically script it before you can, you know, throw the switch and allow it to start. Everybody says that.
Wake up the monster, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, once you have it, you just throw a switch. And we're like, yeah, it's
like
never,
Frankenstein.
It's
yeah.
Never like
yeah.
That. Just saying.
How many counties in the state have this or a similar program already?
So the prosecutor by Carpell, I think we're up to about 50 of the 58 counties in California now use it. It's nationwide system, but California was, we were, you know, probably, you know, the 20th or 21st, and now slowly but surely every county's going to it. And the goal with that one is going paperless for as much as you can. Obviously, there are some things where you're still going to want the paper, but that system is... That system is the one that allows for iSubpoena, but again, each county has their IT department that has to work through it and process it before it's going to be allowed. So
this isn't an off-the-shelf program that is purchased, implemented, and you go. It still needs to be tweaked and played with by
right.
county.
But
yeah.
But aside from that, the courts could still allow us to do the simple roll call, because we were doing this during COVID. We would call the cases in the morning. The courts would say, that one's going to go at 9:15, that one will go at 10:30, that one won't go till 1:30. And then we would call all those witnesses. And our subpoena said that. Do not come to court until you receive the phone call. And the reason was the courts did not want, you know, 50 witnesses standing on the second floor hallway, potentially exposing, you know, if one of them had COVID, exposing everyone to COVID. So it worked during that time. And that's all I'm saying. Let's just go back to that.
So why was that rolled back? Why not just continue to do it if you could handle
I
it?
Don't
is it
know.
Cost?
I don't know. I've asked the judges to do it. I've said, let's do this. But
I would think the unions would be kind of hot and bothered about it too.
The police chiefs all signed a letter saying we really need to do this. We appreciated it before. We have staffing issues. The courts still haven't gone back to that, but we'll keep trying for that because it's such a absurd use of resources and time.
Yeah, it seems like it's a waste on one hand and it's efficiency on the other hand.
And it's a safety issue, right? You can't have people who haven't had sleep out on the street. You can't have our patrols short-staffed because law enforcement officers are at the courthouse. And frankly, it's unfair to citizens, right? We've had citizens who say, I made appointments for this afternoon because your subpoena said to be here at 9:15. Now you're telling me I'm going to come back at 2 o'clock. It's really not.
Or I can't.
Right. Right, exactly. So that's
maybe that's
the
what it is
there.
If it becomes an inconvenience for the judges.
Right.
Maybe then they start.
Yeah.
It probably wouldn't be kosher if you just did a little note, said, you know, and if it's after 11 o'clock, feel free to let the court know that you're not available.
Right.
And all of a sudden they get 15 or 20 a week not available because people took them at their word.
Yes. Yeah, we definitely will keep working on that because this is something I'll get done in the next 6 months, I promise.
It seems real simple and easy, though, and non-controversial and those types of things. What is the feedback that you get, or is it just crickets?
That if everybody's there, then they really can decide what's going to go, and then people can resolve cases. So having everybody in the room, I don't think that's the way to do it. I think you have an earlier roll call. I think you either do it the evening before, you know, 4 o'clock, what's going to go tomorrow, and then we can call off witnesses, or you make the attorneys be in court at 8 a.m. because stuff's really, really, really going to start at 9.
Ooh,
and I'm game for that.
That would make sense also. I mean, they're in the building by 8 o'clock, so they don't even have to get there earlier. Now we have the crickets. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:45.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Maggie Fleming. Maggie, when you're looking at some of these, I guess they'd be called enhancements rather than changes, because, you know, if you're going back to what was known before and what was employed and what other communities are utilizing, you know, at some point you scratch your head and you go, why not us? Are we to the point where, as a community, we can start scratching our heads and going, hey, wait a minute, why not us?
I think so. I think we know how other counties function, you know, ways that they've improved their systems and making sure they're more efficient. I think we really should be taking a look at that. I was talking to the northern region of League of Cities a couple months ago, and one of the things I was talking about is how other communities are addressing their petty thieves. And I know that other counties still incarcerate petty theft offenders. They still go to jail. So in the old days, you would do 2 days in jail if you committed a petty theft.
You were off the street.
Yeah. It was a consequence. That went away years ago, and part of it was legislative, not legislative changes about the time, but how it was sort of viewed, but also because of COVID. But we know that
statewide, not Humboldt County specifically, or exclusively?
No, Humboldt County. Humboldt County. Because so we had to reduce our population at our jail. So I've reached out to other DAs because, you know, we have chronic offenders here. We have people who will not stop committing petty theft. These are not people who have issues. These are people who are thieves. And I've reached out to other counties and said, oh, absolutely, we still do jail time on our petty thefts. How else are you going to stop them? And this is one of those issues that I've taken to my state association. I've talked about what we need to see legislatively to impose this and some of the changes we need to make. And I do think one area, Brian, I know I've talked about it before, is it used to be if you had a petty theft who kept reoffending, you could make it a felony charge at some point. What that required, though, was jail time. You had to have had the theft case result in an overnight stay at the jail. Basically, even a book and release would be considered jail time. But you had to do that. And then that got taken away during the Prop 47 era, where people didn't think that was appropriate. I think the communities now have understand the really significant impact that petty thieves have, particularly on mom-and-pop stores.
The drip, drip, drip fatigue.
Exactly.
Constant.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we've seen, you know, a number of stores, for example, in San Francisco, Walgreens, places like that, have ended up having to close.
Earlier this week, they were talking about Starbucks.
They just can't afford to stay open when every day they're getting. And so that needs to change. And I do think that statewide, and particularly if we could get the support of League of Cities, if we could get the support of police chiefs, I know they will, the Sheriff's Department, I know they will, and then my association, we really have to combat this because it is such a chronic problem and it has such a negative effect on communities.
Is it a jail problem? Is it
No.
a criminal justice problem?
It's a criminal justice problem.
Or is it a sentencing problem from the judges, not
That's
doing
what I should
it.
Say. Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. Because too often people view it as, oh, that poor person. And I'm not talking about the person who, you know, went in because they're starving and they stole a piece of food. I'm talking about the chronic thieves who are just always going to go in there and they're going to steal tents because they can sell them. They're going to go in and steal designer jeans. I mean, we used to have that at the mall. People would walk in and pick up 10 pairs of jeans because they can sell them out of their trunk, you know, off the highway and make some serious money off of that. That's what we're talking about. Those are the people who need to go to jail and eventually be handled as felons.
Well, you got a couple things still to punch out before the end of the year.
Easy peasy.
Thanks for coming by. See everybody tomorrow.